This is an ABC podcast.
Hey, hey, Alice Brennan here, and welcome to Background Briefing. We put Australia's best investigations in your pod feed every single week. Well, today, I'm going to take you on a bus trip. The bus is one of those long, air-conditioned rentals with garish, bright blue fabric seats, and someone's passing around mini packets of chips and cut-up fruit. But this isn't any old tourist trip. We're headed north out of Perth.
Hello. My name's Dallas Phillips, as if you didn't know. Come on, I'm talking about it now.
The 20 or so on this bus are mostly Aboriginal people, and everyone here is linked by a similar story.
Now I feel empowered to talk out and give people a voice, you know? And we all do that, and if we all chip away, just chip away, we'll get there, you know?
The bus arches around a corner, and suddenly the endless expanse of dry, rust-tinted fields is interrupted. A surreal cluster of pink and orange buildings comes shooting up out of the landscape.
I thank everyone, like now, on the bus with me, and together we'll go forward, eh? We'll get these ugly fucking mutts for what they did to us, you know? They destroyed a lot of lives, and you know what? Suffering is suffering. It's not about colour. We all have the same hurt.
Reporter Jeremy Storycutter, you were on the bus, and the town you're heading to is the only one of its kind in Australia.
Yeah, hi, Alice. So this place is built entirely around a monastery.
Very soon, any of you, and your men friends as well, can come along and view the treasures of New Norcia.
Once the world was shut out of New Norcia, this Spanish Benedictine monastery near Perth. New Norcia was a home for Aboriginal families and children sent here either by their parents for education or under the stern regime of the government protector of Aborigines.
This is where many of the people on the bus actually grew up, and Jeremy, for them, the return to New Norcia is no homecoming.
No, so everyone gets off the bus and immediately sets about tying these black, red and yellow little ribbons along the cobweb bars of an old underground cellar.
Can you tie a ribbon there?
So I'm standing inside the grounds of New Norcia, past the big, imposing gates that lead you through, but beneath an even more imposing monastery structure that's this sort of dusty Spanish pink that references its origins, its Spanish origins. It's an eerie place. Aboriginal and non-Aboriginal children were housed at New Norcia. Some were sent by their parents, others were taken to the New Norcia mission as part of the Stolen Generation.
You know, it's a bad place for kids. It was a bad place for kids. It damaged so many. So many died because they couldn't function from day-to-day things, the drink, you know?
Jeremy, this place has among the worst records of alleged historical abuse of any institution in the country, right?
Yeah, so the Benedictine monks and nuns of New Norcia inflicted untold pain on young boys and girls between at least the 1950s and 70s. The Benedictine community who still operate here call it a source of indescribable shame, and yet the grounds and buildings, they're still maintained as a site of religious pilgrimage and a quirky stop-off for grey nomads and tourists.
Just a warning, this story has some bad words in it, and we do talk about childhood sexual abuse.
Dallas Phillips is a proud Noongar woman who grew up behind these walls. She's standing staunch, wielding a wooden walking stick in the shadow of the former girls' orphanage.
Let's move on and get out of this fucking place, eh? We should get it wiped off the map because and just level it and just have a big monument to say this place was Warrawindong, meaning really bad and wicked. They're still there. And while they're still there, it still haunts us.
This is just one group of people for whom the trauma of years of abuse still lingers. Abuse that came at the hands of perpetrators in places like religious and government institutions. Across Australia, many survivors of childhood sexual abuse like them are seeking some kind of acknowledgement of their history through Australia's National Redress Scheme. The scheme involves getting institutions to pay money to those abused in their care. But in that process, a new trauma is emerging. It's a trauma that involves the so-called honeypot of redress payments. And even though survivors have a free legal service, there's a burgeoning cottage industry of law firms looking to get in on the action. As I head back to the bus after Dallas's speech, one survivor leans in and tells me he was recently approached by a law firm offering to help with his redress application in exchange for $10,000. He tells me he never signed anything, but he knows others who have. He says everyone is talking about it, and I should look into it. It's late afternoon, but it's still hot when I pull up outside a small house in a quiet Western Australian town, a few hours north of New Norcia. I'm not going to mention the name of the town I'm in, or that of the Aboriginal man I'm about to meet. He survived abuse at New Norcia, but unlike those who are on the bus, he's not in a place where he's ready to let others in his life know about it. Could you introduce yourself and,
Hey, I'm Jatangu Jatanod.
His memories of New Norcia, the hallways, the private rooms, the old underground cellar, they still haunt him.
They had a cellar there, you know, when you go past New Norcia. There was a big cellar down all underneath there, all the bars.
To protect his identity and his history, he's asked that I just call him Uncle Justin.
We can hear one young bloke there. We know the bloke took a boy in there. And we can hear him screaming from outside, you know, poor boy. They looked there, listen to him, look what they're doing. Don't know what they're doing, but he was screaming.
The aircon inside Uncle Justin's living room is working on overdrive to keep us cool. We sit opposite each other on soft, sunken couches, watched over by a framed West Coast Eagles Premier's poster and a large portrait of Jesus Christ. His phone is tucked into the top pocket of his red checkered shirt. It occasionally chimes in with a new message, but he never reaches to check it.
One of the monks was in there with him, or a couple, could have been a couple, I don't know, but they took him in there anyway. We heard him screaming like hell. But they don't do him poor, but I don't know.
Uncle Justin was 10 years old when he was taken to New Norcia. He didn't leave until he was 17. 6 decades later, living with diabetes and arthritis in his back and shoulders, his memory of the place is still strikingly clear, right down to the sheephead soup kids were served for breakfast.
Oh, in the morning you'd have sheephead soup, you know, just plain water with soup. You get the bread and dip it in there. We had to eat it, you know, it's the only best thing. Dip it in there, you push a sheep high out of the way. It's in the way. very bad for you that day.
Uncle Justin's cheeks swell and his eyes sparkle when he laughs. We share a couple of sandwiches I've bought from a nearby roadhouse and he makes me feel at home. These days he keeps healthy by making his own bush medicine, made from plants he gathers from nearby bushland.
Oh, you go out the bush, got the cutters. Cut it right down underneath the roots, you know, and then the missus bought a mulcher, bring it all in like little sawdust pieces, you know, little tiny pieces. It's nice. I'm on a bit of, you know, try a little bit.
Yeah, if it's gone. He grabs a plastic bottle from the fridge and tilts some out for me into a glass. It's a cold, deep, earthy tea.
Make it real strong, you know, just make it a bit.
Oh, it's delicious.
You don't put too much water in
it. Yeah.
Boil up into a real strong brew.
Oh, thank you.
It's refreshing.
But when he talks about New Norcia, he leans back, fingers folded on his stomach, staring at the wall behind my head, almost as if he's looking through it.
Yeah, I used to make me and Mark first cut, you know, one day to make a, take us into the room, with a visiting room, and have a talk with us and give us a bottle of wine, you know, give us a cup of wine or that, you know, these little fellows.
He says when the monks would give him and his cousin wine, things would go fuzzy.
Started messing around with us and we don't know nothing later on after that, you know what happened. But I knew he was messing with us, you know, doing things to us. Even the monks, You know, you won't call them monks. How can you call them rapists?
Uncle Justin says he was raped over a number of years at New Norcia. There was no escaping it. If you tried to run away, he tells me, you'd be found and driven straight back. That pain of New Norcia, that stays with Uncle Justin every day. It moves around with him when he's in his home or shuffling through his garden.
It was a bad experience what we went through. And it still hurts now, you know, just thinking about it, what happened. You know, that's why I'm pretty quiet most of the time, you know, I don't hardly mix up with anyone, you know. That's why the missus here, she goes, oh, you know, what, aren't you talking anything? I said, I just like to be quiet on my own, you know. Didn't like to mix up with anyone. That's the way I was when I come out of here, just mind my own business. Lay in bed, she asked me, oh, what you crying for? I said, oh, nothing, you know. So I just thinking about things, what happened to me. Put a shoulder for me to lean on and sob, you know, and cry a bit. So I went away and happened a few times like that. Just, you know, I could be walking around anywhere and I cry, you know, just tears came out of my eyes, just thinking. I like somebody, I used to drink a lot before. And I stopped that now, so just sort of just hanging on to my life now and just, you know. But I still think, God knows what happened. Still think about it and it'll never go away.
Nothing can ever change or fully heal what happened to Uncle Justin or survivors like him. But in July 2018, on the recommendation of the Royal Commission into Institutional Responses to Child Sexual Abuse, the then Turnbull government launched the National Redress Scheme.
The establishment of a National Redress Scheme acknowledges the abuse that occurred. It is the most significant step in addressing the wrongs of the past and providing a just response to survivors. It is also an important step towards healing.
The scheme is designed for people like Uncle Justin, who were sexually abused as children in institutions, to be given redress via a payment of up to $150,000, as well as access to counselling. The application process is supposed to be simple, or at least easier and less painful than pursuing a claim against an institution through the courts. It's something survivors can do themselves, but the government has also funded a small army of free lawyers and other support services to help people submit their applications. The scheme isn't perfect, and it's been widely criticised for being too slow, too complicated, and not offering payments that reflect the suffering inflicted by institutions. So far, just over 7,000 people have applied. But the Royal Commission estimated that 60,000 people are eligible for redress payments. That means the total amount paid out through the scheme could run up into the billions. With that amount of money in play, law firms have begun to circle. When Uncle Justin started hearing people talk about the scheme back in July of 2018, he wanted to learn more.
Everybody was talking about it, so I went to Day Dawn there. That's when I got onto it there, didn't it?
Daydawn is a beloved Aboriginal support and advocacy centre in Perth. The centre's an initiative of the Roman Catholic Church in the Perth Archdiocese.
The Daydawn Advocacy Centre promotes the rights of the individual and the full participation of the Indigenous population in West Australian society. It is a call for reconciliation, mutual forgiveness and unity as one family under God.
Uncle Justin drove a couple of hundred kilometres just to get to Daydawn. When he arrived, he told the front desk he wanted to speak with someone about applying for the National Redress Scheme, and he was ushered over to a lawyer inside the centre.
That's when CLP was, plug whatever CLP, and I didn't know any other lawyer, so I just went with him, like, you know.
The lawyer was from a Perth-based personal injury law firm called CLP Legal. Its website describes the firm as striving to create a culture of service excellence.
At CLP Legal, we don't give up without a fight. We're specialists in a wide range of personal injury insurance claims, so come and talk to us. Feel the difference with CLP Legal.
Uncle Justin gave his details to the lawyer, who said they'd help with his application to the National Redress Scheme.
So I just, you know, went with him and he took some particulars down and that.
Uncle Justin says he didn't really understand that he would be charged if he used their services, just that they were there to help him. But then he received a whole lot of forms to sign.
Yeah, I never thought, I just thought, you know, probably that was a procedure that we'd gone through, you know, and never thought nothing of it.
And do you remember when you were signing those papers, whether it was clear that there'd be a cost involved, you know, if your claim was successful, that you'd have to pay them a certain amount?
Not really, you know, because I didn't know what had gone on. I just said, there's a lawyer. I just thought that day, you know, they'd help me get something, and that was it.
Uncle Justin had signed on to what's called a cost agreement with CLP. I've got a copy of it. It's a dense 3-page bit of legalese. Those 3 pages committed Uncle Justin to paying CLP to help submit his redress application for a fee estimated to be up to $5,500.
That's, well, you know, $5,000, I don't know what for, you know. Why'd I need that?
When you were doing that, did you know or were you ever told that there was a free government service available?
No one told me. Nothing.
National redress scheme payments are capped at $150,000, but so far survivors have been awarded an average of about $80,000. Uncle Justin is hoping he can use his payment to buy the home we're sitting in.
But I'm thinking about buying this, you know, I've got this up for sale too, you know, $50,000.
Every dollar counts, and $5,500 would make a big difference. But now Uncle Justin is tied into that agreement with CLP Legal, and he tells me he's not the only one.
When I went in, a lot of other Aboriginal wasn't there. They were in there, you know, waiting to do the same thing, you know. Fill out so they can get onto the redress again, you know.
So do you reckon there's probably actually quite a number of members of the Aboriginal community who have been signed up with CLP?
Yeah, I'm sure. My brother, he's very sick, you know, and he's still waiting for answers from CLP too, and he's just about on the way out, you know.
Now, it's important to note that signing up clients and charging them to help with their redress applications isn't against the law. In fact, the Royal Commission left the option open for survivors to engage law firms rather than use the free government services if that's what they wanted. But the way Uncle Justin tells it, he wasn't really made aware of his options. He doesn't understand why $5,500 of what would be his money should go to a law firm when there's a free service available. And he doesn't really like how he's been treated. Uncle Justin says CLP has signed up other Aboriginal survivors just like him. So I'm heading back to Perth to meet one. Do you need a glass of water or anything?
No,
Coffee. Need to get one of those soon.
My name's Adeline Parfitt and I'm from Perth, Western Australia.
Adeline is a survivor of abuse. Her claim is not against New Norcia, but against the Western Australian government. She's 45 and elegantly dressed in a black cardigan and small gold hooped earrings. Like Uncle Justin, she was referred to CLP after visiting the Aboriginal Support Centre, Daydawn. And like Uncle Justin, when she saw a representative from the law firm was set up inside the centre, she assumed they were offering a free service and gave over her details.
I thought it was a non-for-profit. I thought we didn't have to pay, but apparently we do.
Then, like Uncle Justin, she thought signing the cost agreement was all part of the usual redress process. And just like Uncle Justin, she's now on the hook for a fee estimated at up to $5,500. Adeline's face scrunches when she tells me she now realises she could have gotten the same service for free.
The money that people get for redress is meant to help us, I don't know, shut doors and open other doors, you know. We're suffering from all the stuff that's happened to us. So a bit of money will help us in our lives, maybe make it a bit comfortable. And when they take $5,000, to us, that's a lot of money. We don't see a lot of money.
Adeline's issues with CLP go far beyond just money. After signing on with the law firm, she said the firm were difficult to deal with. She looks exasperated when she explains how hard it was to get a hold of any lawyers from the firm.
I felt like I was just left in the dark with CIP, just a person on the phone. It's just like talking to a robot. When it was time to give my story about what happened to me, I was a bit taken back the way she wanted me to tell her on the phone about what happened to me. I gave her a little bit of information, not too much, because I don't know how to respond to people like that on the phone. I don't know who I'm speaking to or, yeah.
With a number of personal health problems mounting, Adeline was feeling increasingly desperate and upset at the lack of progress with her claim. She decided to call the redress scheme directly, but was heartbroken to find that no application had ever been submitted on her behalf. As far as the scheme was concerned, they'd never even heard of her.
I've sat with this company for ages, and then all of a sudden I thought I'd ring to find out where I'm sitting at after nearly a year with them, to find out that there's no redress, no claiming, nothing.
Yeah, I mean, what were your feelings when you finally broke and you called the redress scheme and were told actually there wasn't an active application going?
I was so upset. It was like a whole year went by and nothing. I was like, what are these people doing? You know, what they're doing?
Neither Adeline Parfitt nor Uncle Justin's redress applications were ever submitted by CLP Legal. They're both now working with lawyers from the government-funded service No More, who have since submitted applications for them. No More's also trying to get them out of their cost agreements and having to pay or deal with CLP. But Adeline thinks the law firm has exploited survivors in the Aboriginal community.
I think these lawyers have got a whiff of this, of where they can get some business. So they've gone into Data One Agency and signed up all these people, and I've got a family member that's with them. She lives on the streets here, but she's still with them.
So a family member of yours lives on the street in Perth and has been signed up to a cost agreement with, yeah, even though there's a free government service just around the corner?
That's right, that's correct. And there's a lot of them that are on the streets here that have signed up with CLP for this. A lot of these people are rough, living rough. A lot of them aren't well educated, you know, but they know what happened. They've got records to prove it. So, yeah, I don't think a lot of them understand what they're signing up for, and to be put in a situation like that is really not really good at all for people. I feel for my people, and I will speak up for them, especially if they're not going to get what they deserve, you know. They've suffered enough.
CLP Legal did not agree to an interview, and in an email told me they couldn't answer any of my questions, quote, due to ethical and confidentiality obligations to their clients. So what was Daydawn doing, referring its clients, like Uncle Justin and Adeline, to a paid legal service? The Daydawn Advocacy Centre is run by Betsy Buchanan. In 2018, Betsy was nominated for WA Senior Australian of the Year for her work improving the lives of Aboriginal people. She's a tireless campaigner and people love her. Hello, is that Betsy Buchanan? Oh, hi. It's just Jeremy Story Carter from the ABC. How are you doing? Yeah, I'm very well, thanks. When I called her, the phone line was scratchy and she was out of the office. So I've spoken to a number of survivors who've signed to cost agreements with CLP after being referred to a lawyer from the firm when they attended Daydawn. And, you know, these survivors sort of, the way they tell it to me, they weren't actually really aware that CLP was a private firm, and they believe that they were...
That's true.
Well, the people I've spoken to say that they believe they were speaking to a non-for-profit type official service.
They explain, these are top lawyers. They're not likely to make an error like that. I mean, that's insulting to them and to me.
I certainly don't mean it as an insult.
Well,
it's just purely
what... I'm sorry,
what...
Jeremy, but by saying that, they come to our office, I hear what they say to the clients. They not only tell them verbally, it's put in writing.
Well, I'm basing this on what I've been told by survivors of abuse who've said this to me, and that they didn't understand that, you know, they thought initially that they were dealing with a free sort of non-for-profit service, and that when they received their cost agreements...
No, I deeply resent the idea that we've exploited people or not given them a choice. If people had a complaint like that, they can come to me personally or put it in writing to the director of Daydawn, and they can send a copy to CLP. There's remedies for that. I mean, whispers and shadows are not the way to deal with something like that.
Betsy Buchanan told me that any further questions would have to be sent to the centre's director by email. But Daydawn decided not to comment. Since I've started investigating this story, I've had word that Daydawn have begun talks with No More to have a representative from the Free Government Legal Service work out of their offices. The more survivors and advocates I talk to, the more this emerging cottage industry starts to reveal itself. Of the 7,000 people who have lodged applications to the redress scheme, more than 300 have had their applications submitted with the help of private law firms. The government's free legal service, No More, has helped just over 1,000 people apply. The organisation is working with a significant number of survivors to get out of their cost agreements, and has recently written to the government warning of the, quote, exploitative practices of some law firms who are charging excessive fees. It's not just No More who are worried about this emerging industry.
It's probably one of the things we discuss most often in our team meetings is how disgusted we kind of are about their behaviour, and we see it day in, day out. So for us, it's a huge issue.
That's Sylvia Galdamez, a former lawyer who now heads up Beyond Brave, a government-funded offshoot of child sexual abuse support agency Bravehearts. She and her team have so far helped 125 clients submit their redress applications free of charge. She reels off a litany of bad experiences that survivors have shared with her office. Stories of survivors being signed to huge cost agreements, of being signed up while drug-affected, even of being coerced to signing agreements while in prison. And then there are those clients who have been left traumatised by the way they've been treated by law firms.
We had a junior lawyer taking a statement from one of our clients, and essentially the horror that her expression or how she was reacting to what this client was saying really severely triggered our client and made her believe that she wasn't being believed and they were questioning her claim.
In April, Sylvia Galdamez raised the issue with the Senate committee responsible for overseeing the implementation of the redress scheme.
I declare open this public hearing of the Joint...
The hearing took place via teleconference during the worst of the COVID-19 shutdown.
The last issue that I wanted to raise relates to the promotion of the scheme, or rather, the lack of promotion and the consequences that this is having.
Sylvia Galdamez told the committee that a failure to promote the redress scheme has led to misinformation and a lack of understanding about it. She says law firms have seized on that confusion.
Another consequence of this is that survivors are being exploited by unscrupulous law firms seeking to make money because some survivors believe that they need lawyers to complete their application. More needs to be done to protect these vulnerable clients.
Even though the government has funded support services and free legal assistance, the survivors I've spoken to so far didn't know how to access them or even that such services exist. And in that vacuum, law firms have pounced. If you want to see a good example of this, head to the URL nationalredressscheme.com.au. When you open the page, you'll find a slickly produced video.
The Australian Parliament has created a redress scheme for victims of institutional sexual abuse.
It initially looks and sounds all official.
There are several important things you need to know before you apply to the redress scheme.
Then there's a clue.
You should talk to a specialist solicitor before you contact the scheme. The solicitor will assess your case and will make sure you have the best chance to receive the maximum redress.
The domain name nationalredressscheme.com.au is actually owned by a law firm in New South Wales, run and named after a lawyer called Peter Kelso. Ironically, he's one of Australia's most outspoken critics of the redress scheme.
It's important you don't sell yourself short. If you're thinking about applying for redress, contact Kelso Lawyers today.
In that video and on his website, Peter Kelso, who says he's represented hundreds of abuse survivors, advises people not to contact the National Redress Scheme without speaking to lawyers first. He discourages survivors from using the free government legal service, and a post on the firm's Facebook page questions whether it can even be trusted. So I'm driving the long, dry, but relatively straight inland route between Perth and Geraldton. I'm about 300 k's in, probably another 100 or so to go. It's a warm morning, it's only about 9 o'clock, but already I reckon the temperature's above 35, 36. I'm heading to Geraldton to learn more about how Kelso Lawyers operates. One of Kelso's ex-clients, a guy called Michael, has agreed to meet me. Michael is a survivor of institutional abuse, and for the first time he's pursuing a claim through the National Redress Scheme. Michael signed on to a cost agreement with a lawyer, and initially it sounds like it was all going pretty well, but once he got a sense of the fees and the fact there was a free government alternative, he's actually been trying to get out of that cost agreement. So I'm keen to meet him and understand a little bit more about his story. G'day. Is here okay to park?
Yeah.
Michael Warner is waiting out the front of his house to greet me when I arrive.
Good to see you.
Lovely to meet you.
Yeah.
Michael's deep voice and burly physique are offset by his soft, kind eyes and the fluffy Pekingese dog running around at his feet.
Excuse peekaboo.
No. Oh, hello.
That's peekaboo.
Peekaboo.
Yeah.
G'day.
Everybody in Geraldton knows peekaboo. Everybody loves peekaboo.
Even though we're meeting just minutes from the white sands and clear waters of WA's sun-drenched coastline, Michael actually grew up thousands of kilometres away in Victoria. He had a rough and abusive childhood, and at age 13, he says he was taken into state care at Turana, a now notorious facility in inner Melbourne.
I was bullied and I experienced sexual abuse from other inmates, physical abuse, and then also abuse from an officer, a youth officer. You know, I can't remember exactly how many times, but certainly on numerous occasions. And, I could have been so much more, you know.
One day in 2018, Michael was scrolling around on Facebook when he saw a post that had been shared about the National Redress Scheme. He clicked through to what turned out to be the website for Kelso Lawyers, who were based in Newcastle.
One of the things that really got me was that Peter Kelso, who's the principal of Kelso's law firm, he said that he was also a product of abuse and that he was an institution and he was a ward of the state, and that did it for me. I mean, here is somebody that knows the pain and everything that, you know, survivors have gone through, and I thought, well, that's great. And I didn't give any, I went in totally, I was totally, you know, convinced that they would be the perfect organisation to handle my redress. But I really didn't know anything about applying for redress.
Michael says his initial interactions with Kelso Lawyers were positive. After speaking directly with Peter Kelso, a young lawyer was assigned to his case. They were caring and patient and even helped arrange some counselling sessions for him. But then that lawyer left the firm, and the lawyer who replaced them and took over Michael's case also left.
I sort of felt uncomfortable and sort of cut loose, because you want to deal with the same person because they understand you. You've had a rapport with them, and then you've got to go all over it again.
And then there was the cost agreement Michael had been sent out. Rather than bill for specific work or hours, the Kelso Lawyers cost agreement lists a tiered scale of professional charges that are dependent on the ultimate size of the payment given to the survivor by the redress scheme. If Michael got the current average redress payment of around $80,000, he'd have to pay Kelso Lawyers $13,750, including GST, which is more than 17% of the payment. If his redress payment was above $120,000, which is what the firm had sought to claim for him, he'd be charged $15,000, plus a further $1,500 in GST.
You know, like, why, as a victim, should I pay a solicitor $15,000 when there is a free service, for God's sake? I mean, it just doesn't make sense. Okay, I was under the impression that they had the expertise in the redress scheme and all that sort of. But I, you know, looking at the application papers which I've got here, it's pretty straightforward. You know, like, you fill out the institution that you were incarcerated in, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Fill out all of that out, your details, and then a statement. Okay, is it worth $15,000? I
unlike Uncle Justin and Adeline Parfitt, the lawyers did submit Michael's application. He's still waiting to hear what the outcome will be and how much he'll receive. But he's now working with the government-funded service No More to see if he can get out of paying the $16,500 to Kelso lawyers.
The big difference, I have to say, is in the legal talk. And I, you know, after reading through a summary of No More, it's in plain English, and there's no power of attorney, and there's no, well, there's no cost agreement because it's a free service, but there's none of that. And you know, you sort of feel, yeah, I've been bound up. You know, how can I put it? It's a lot easier reading through and listening to No More than it is with Kelso.
Michael starts to look visibly uncomfortable as he talks.
You going all okay if you do you
yeah,
need to
have a cigarette?
Yeah.
Go have a break.
Yeah, go take five.
There's a large photo of Peter Kelso on his website. He's a big guy in his 60s with black-rimmed glasses and short, light brown hair. He talks openly about being a survivor of abuse himself, and says he's a crusader against the establishment who need to be held accountable for the horrors they've caused. When we eventually speak, it's past 8 p.m. and he's just finished dinner.
Peter Kelso here.
Oh, hi, Peter. It's Jeremy Story-Carter from the ABC. How are you doing?
Oh, good, yeah. I've just...
Peter Kelso speaks candidly and makes no apologies for the fees he charges.
My philosophy is this, is that victims deserve the best legal service possible. They don't deserve free legal services and the cheapest out there or something that the government's funded. They don't deserve that.
So, look, I've viewed a cost agreement for the redress scheme from Kelso Lawyers, and to assist with an application to the redress scheme, your firm charges up to $16,500, including GST. Do you think charging those sorts of fees is in the best interest of survivors?
So we have developed a cost agreement, which is an outcome-based fee. So the bigger amount of money we achieve for the client, the larger our fee, and the smaller amount we get for them, the smaller our fee.
So I've spoken to a survivor who was a client of yours, who was not only upset at the prospect of paying over $15,000 for assistance with his application to the redress scheme. He says he wasn't aware that there was a free government service.
That's rubbish.
So what I'm interested in, that survivor has said that not only was he not made aware of the free government service, he does feel uncomfortable and upset that he's having to pay more than $15,000. But he also says that the level of care that he's received since working with No More has actually been far more positive.
Well, I'm glad he feels that because he's a rare individual if he says that.
The reason this cottage industry of private law firms doing redress work is able to thrive is because lawyers working in this space are not actually bound by any specific code. And it turns out the government was warned way back in 2018 that this would present a major problem.
To create a slightly dodgy analogy, yes, there are some cowboys, but there's not really a sheriff in town either.
That's Juliet Davis from Griffith University. She and her colleague, Professor Kathleen Daly, have studied redress schemes the world over. And based on what they'd seen in other countries, they knew Australia's redress scheme would offer up a honeypot too tempting for law firms to resist.
In the Irish scheme, there was a lot of anecdotal evidence regarding price gouging and overcharging for services. And in the Canadian scheme, there was a lot of stories about, again, price gouging. We had lawyers who were taking on far too many clients so that they could churn through applications, make a lot of money. So we were seeing a lot of misconduct or unconscionable behaviour occurring in these two schemes. And we really wanted to sound the alarm and let people know that this could happen in Australia as well.
In a 2018 submission to a government joint select committee, they warned that survivors could be exploited. They also anticipated that our scheme would be vulnerable to legal misconduct.
There is a motivation for certain firms, certain individuals to act in an improper way in order to make money. But there's also a lack of effective oversight. The NRS doesn't contain any specific rules for lawyers working within the scheme.
So far, their warnings have not been heeded. Kathleen Daly wants to see a uniformed code that all lawyers working with redress clients are accountable to.
The idea of creating a national regulatory framework needs to be also front and centre as something to develop. It will both deter, and, we hope, and respond to illegal activity and breaches of misconduct.
Liberal Senator Dean Smith chairs the committee that oversees the redress scheme. He says he's open to the idea of introducing changes at a policy level.
The idea that some law firms might be able to act in an unethical behaviour because no one is watching it, that is totally unreasonable.
Do you think that there should be a formal obligation on lawyers operating in this redress scheme space to disclose to clients those exact free government services that are available?
There should be a formal requirement for lawyers to disclose to a survivor that there is opportunity for free access to legal services. And secondly, there should be a requirement on the provider to be made by those people that are suitably qualified, that is, that they have that necessary psychological and counselling background, so as to not inadvertently re-trigger some of those traumatic experiences and memories for survivors.
A formal 2-year review of the National Redress Scheme begins in July, and Senator Smith says changes will be on the table. There's one person I always come back to when I think about this story. Uncle Justin was the kind, softly spoken survivor from New Norcia who kept healthy by drinking bush medicine. When I last checked in with him, he'd just had his redress application submitted by No More. But he was technically still tied to having to pay $5,000 to the Perth law firm CLP Legal. I heard he might have some news. Yeah, hi, it's Jeremy Story Carter from the ABC. How are you doing?
Oh, very good, yeah.
Yeah.
Got my money okay and all that.
Oh, you got the money. Oh, fantastic. Uncle Justin received the highest payment possible from the National Redress Scheme. When we last spoke, he said he was thinking about buying his house, but he's decided against it. He says it needs too much work. Instead, he's bought himself a present.
Yeah, boy, I got a $33,000 Ford Hilux, Toyota Hilux, dark metallic blue.
A Hilux, beautiful.
Yeah, canopy on the back, lovely. Oh, very good, yeah. At least in mine, I own it, you know.
Mm.
No paint over anything. It's metallic, dark blue, lovely. Good car.
He and his partner are sitting in the new Hilux when I call, having driven into a nearby town to pay off some bills. He says he's staying healthy, drinking bush medicine, and just trying to enjoy what's left of his life. And as for the $5,000 he was going to have to pay the law firm CLP, he says he hasn't heard a word from them.
Yeah, they haven't even worked out it right, yeah. I don't think the other lot got any money out, so. That CLP mob. No, I never heard anything. So it might have been all right, but they never charged me anything.
Oh, great. That's great news, yeah. So, and you've got the money now, so hopefully it's all...
Yeah. Yeah, I'm right now. Still got a couple of bob in the bank in there.
I just want to say it was a real privilege meeting you, and I feel very lucky that you were...
Me too, yeah.
And, wish you all the best, and hopefully catch up next time I'm in WA.
See you then, yeah. Thank you, mate.
Cheers, bye-bye. If this story has raised difficult issues for you, there is immediate 24-hour telephone assistance available through Beyond Blue, Men's Line Australia and Lifeline. There is always someone to talk to. Background Briefing sound producers are Lila Schunner and Ingrid Wagner. Sound engineering by Isabella Tropiano and Timothy Jenkins. Supervising producer is Alex Mann and our executive producer is Alice Brennan. Fact-checking by Ben Sveen. I'm Jeremy Story Carter from the ABC's Investigations team. Special thanks to Joe Pacini. You can subscribe to Background Briefing wherever you get your podcasts and on the ABC Listen app. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.